bisha ulo ite va ite vene sempre pa calare dal mane vene si ci picchia vande si e pa calare picchia me in my window. It's the baker boy, and look, he's got a cannoli in his hand.
Hi, this is Gerald Celente with Trends This Week, and that was Louis Prima. Ah, love that cat, man. Boy, did he know how to boogie. So, Trends This Week, I'm really happy to be here on Progressive Radio. And we're going to be doing something on Progressive Radio Network that isn't being done anywhere other than, of course, when you subscribe to the Trends Journal and we do Trends in the News. And that is talking about how today's current events are forming future trends. So being that this is the first Trends This Week show, I'd like to talk a little bit about what trend forecasting is, how I got into it, and why it's so important to people, for people to see what's ahead so they can prepare for the dangers to avoid them and seize the opportunities. Matter of fact, you know, with the presidential reality show going on and the elections coming up shortly and just about a month from now, a year from now, year to date, in November, we'll have the elections in 2016. I was thinking there should be a cabinet position for a secretary of trends and consequences, because that's what trend forecasting is. As I mentioned, current events form future trends. Each day we're looking at events occur. Well, there are consequences to those events and those actions. Just like we're all doing in life what we're doing because of decisions that we've made. The same thing holds true whether it's on a national, international, or a personal level. There are consequences of the decisions, but no one seems to look at them. You go to war, and they always, you know, and they're ramping up to war, they say, what's the exit strategy? And they say, oh, we'll talk about that later. Right now, we got a war to fight. So no one looks at the consequences. And so that's what trend forecasting is, to look at how we're going to see that policies being made really determine the future of our lives in so many different ways. So I began my career, actually. I used to run political campaigns after I got out of graduate school in the early 70s in Westchester County, which, of course, was the richest county in America. And I was really good at it. I used to work for mayoral campaigns, state senators, one after another. And they sent me up to Albany, and they were going to groom me. So I was the assistant to the secretary of the New York State Senate. Of all the jobs I've ever had, that was the worst one I ever had. The guy was great, and the people I worked with were wonderful. Al Abrams, may his soul rest in peace, wonderful man. But it wasn't my kind of gig. You know, I'd be hanging out in the back of the Senate chamber, you know, waiting for the session to start, talking with my buddies. And all of a sudden, a senator would walk in, and they got this flunky up there that we pay for. That we actually pay for, that opens the big doors so the cat can walk through, you know, can't push that door open on his own. And he'd come in, and my friend, one of them, would leave me right away and follow the senator to his desk and pull out the chair to help him sit down. And these big luxury chairs that they had, you know, big leather chairs. And he'd come back, and I'd say to my buddy, I'd say, hey, man, what's the matter? Cat can't sit down by himself? He needs some help? And they said, well, you know, Gerald, if you have that kind of attitude, you're not going to make it here. I said, listen, man, that's not the way I was brought up. You know, my mother, may his soul rest in peace, before I knew what the word meant, she said, I hate cowards. And that's all this word, people cowering cowards. people sucking up to work their way up to the top. So I exited stage right. You know, I didn't want to hang around there too long. And from there, I designed and instructed American politics and campaign technology and taught it at St. John's University. And from there, I went on to be a chief government affairs specialist for the chemical industry. I was working in those days in Chicago, was a major hub for trade associations. So I worked between Chicago and D.C., basically killing environmental legislation. My specialty, of course, was antimicrobials. But, you know, I learned, of course, I would not know what I know now if I had not been on that other side. So people that make statements and want to see what's going on and think they have the solutions for it and only looking from one side of the problem really don't know how it goes on the inside. You know, it leaves them without the skills in a lot of ways to navigate through a system that exists. Matter of fact, one of the writers for our Trends Journal, contributor, and also was just up here in Kingston, Colonial Kingston, in September, when we had a conference, was Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, former Assistant Treasury Secretary under Reagan. And you can say anything you want about Reagan or anything else, but boy, when you hear this video, you could purchase it from us, by the way, at trendsresearch.com, go to the conference, and hear Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, a guy that was there, Assistant Treasury Secretary, saying what was going on back then and how, you know, the media was saying one thing while another thing was going on, you know, it opens your eyes up to a different level. So again, that's what trend forecasting is. It makes no difference where you are or what you did as long as you kept learning. So I'm a political atheist. And boy, it's really easy to be one with this presidential reality show underway. Why would anyone want to associate themselves with the Democrats and Republicans? Because as I see it, they're both murderers and thieves. The Bloods and the Crips. Oh, no, we'll call them the Democrats and Republicans. So in being a, and I say that not facetiously, I say it with all intent and honesty. How many more people do they have to murder around the world in the name of, we're bringing freedom and democracy to these people, and we got to slaughter maybe a million in Iraq before they get it? Or how about we got to take out that Gaddafi over there and destroy their country and about 30,000 people and then turn it into complete chaos? Assad has to go. Gaddafi has to go. So they're murderers and thieves. How many more drone strikes have to happen? And you saw the UN report, those of you that tune into Progressive Radio Network and Gary Noll's work and all the other contributors, you know the data. More innocent people were killed than suspected militants. Suspected. Suspected by whom of what? No judge, no jury, no trial against international law. Murderers. So let's call it what it is. And thieves. They rob our money in the name of too big to fail, tax breaks, loan guarantees, and on and on and on and on. So, going back to trend forecasting, being a political atheist, you have to look at things for the way they are, not the way you want them to be. If you have an agenda, don't become a trend forecaster. So, here's what happened. It's the late 1970s, and I'm starting to wake up. Spending time between Washington and Chicago. You know, as a young guy, I was, you know, putting on my meetings at the Hay Adams Hotel, staying at the Willard. And one day I looked at the group around me, and they were nice people, you know, nothing bad to say about any of them. And I said to myself, what am I doing here? And do I want to keep doing this? I was about 32 years old, and that's a big change point in life. For men, you know, speaking from a guy that's been there and all my other friends. And the women are a little advanced stage than men. They wake up a little earlier. And, you know, you know the story. How many people say, well, I'm keeping this job even though I hate it because it has security and, you know, I have great benefits and blah, 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 blah. And I didn't want to do that. But the turning point came when the Iranian crisis broke out. And I had been reading about how, you know, the United States had overthrown the Democrat with the MI6 out of the UK, the CIA and the MI6 overthrew the democratically elected government of Mossadegh, an Iranian professor, in 1953, and installed the Shah, and made up this whole thing about, you know, the head of the peacock throne, you know. So Mossadegh had the nerve to want to nationalize the Iranian oil. Could you imagine that? Giving the oil back after colonization, taken away from them from the British and the Americans, Standard Oil and Anglo-Iranian Oil, better known today as BP, and of course ExxonMobil. And he had the nerve to want to give that wealth to the people of Iran. And they couldn't have any of that. So no nationalization. Let's overthrow this guy. So they overthrew him and put in the Shah. And they had I remember reading about the Savak, the secret police. And they were about as brutal as the SS. Matter of fact, they gave the SS gave Savak a bad name. I mean, Savak was noted for their brutality beyond, you know, anything that we had known before. Well, I guess they were comparable to the SS. I don't want to make a value judgment. Anyway, so when the revolution started happening in Iran and I saw millions of people taking to the streets, I said, oh, this thing is real. This thing is going to keep coming down. But again, it goes back to the media and the prostitutes who work for it. All they do is they, you know, being paid whores, well, you know, as prostitutes, they repeat what they're paid to say. So we had one-sided story about what was going on in Iran. And people forget the story. The story went along the lines of, they're overthrowing the Shah and they're telling America to close their embassy. They had enough of America propping up this dictator. And America, well, you're not going to tell us what to do. Don't you know who we are? Hey, we could overthrow countries in Latin America, around the world. We'll do what we want. We're not closing our embassy. Listen, close the embassy. We had enough. We're not closing the embassy. And Jimmy Carter goes visits the Shah of Iran. I'll never forget it. In those days, it was a big deal when the president went overseas. He'd come back and they'd have that helicopter on the front of the White House lawn. He'd walk up to the microphone. And Jimmy Carter, again, after spending New Year's Eve with the Shah and his wife, him and Rosalind, he announces to the American people that the Shah is the island of stability in the Middle East. At that moment, I had become a political atheist. I'd been around long enough. I have pictures of me and Reagan, this one, that one. I'd been around. I knew what was going on. And then after that anger hit me, I said, what will be the implications? Current events form future trends. And I realized that gold and oil prices would go up. So I started playing the commodity markets. I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't have a clue. To make a very long story short, I parlayed $5,000 bet into nearly $750,000 by playing the commodities markets. I ended up losing most of it, but I made enough so I could quit my job. And I left Chicago, packed my bags, moved to Rhinebeck, New York. At that time, it was a very wonderful place before the rich folks found it. It's still a wonderful place, but just not my kind of groove. It was really a neat place. There was a place called Jack Caruso. It was a great restaurant. And one time, David Jack Caruso got arrested. This is the late 70s, early 80s. For trying to, he jumped out of an airplane and tried to hang glide to land on top of the World Trade Center. So it was really filled with a lot of cool people. It was away from the city. And I became a recluse for about 4 years. You know, I used to raise my own chickens with my former wife, may she rest in peace. And we used to can over 100 quarts of tomatoes. So I was going through the shell shock of
seeing the future, not in a sense that I could predict it, but understanding how the current events were forming future trends. So I wanted to get away from everybody. And I moved up to Rhinebeck and began the Trends Research Institute. And my first big forecast, began it in 1980, was in 1987. And I sent out a press release. In those days, of course, everything went via mail. And the headline read that 1987 will be the year it all crashes, words to that effect. And the Wall Street Journal picked the story up. And, of course, the markets crashed in October of 1987. And that's when I started getting, you know, some following. And then I wrote the book Trend Tracking based on that. And that was became a Warner book, far better than Megatrends Time magazine. And then I realized that what I was doing differently that everyone else was doing was I was looking at over 300 different trend categories with the understanding that all things are connected. Or as Chief Seattle is alleged to have said, all things are connected like the blood which unites us all. So one of the reasons why I had forecast the 1987 stock market crash was not only because of the bubble aspects that were being built, but also on a political sense. Reagan was losing his popularity very rapidly as a result of the Iran-Contra scandal and other things going on. And that publicity and persona was also boosting the marketplace. So that was one of the elements that I was looking at that others weren't looking at. And again, you know, it was looking at a whole variety of things, seeing, you know, what was going on in Asia, seeing how other markets were developing and what their strengths and weaknesses were, but also on the geopolitical side of things. So, you know, go back to the 1970s, and I mentioned I began buying gold and speculating in the markets in the late 1970s. Nobody knew how to do this stuff. And I'm saying nobody, very few people. It wasn't like today. So, for example, when I mentioned to you that I lost a lot of what I made, you know, I remember waking up one morning in January of 1980 and gold prices collapsing and losing like $250,000. Of course, it was all paper money. And what was different back then than now is that there was no global marketplace. That's how things have changed so much. You know, Russia, you know, was still the Soviet Union. China, you know, what we knew about was Mao, and there was the bamboo curtain. India, what'd you know about India? Gandhi. You know, there was no world trade. So gold then was very thinly traded, and it was a very different situation than today. But that's when I began my career and started looking at things. Matter of fact, I mentioned to you I moved to Rhinebeck, and you know, had a beautiful place up there with lovely gardens and vegetable gardens, and you know, I coined the term, you know, a number of years later, clean foods, because of the lifestyle that I was living. And as I mentioned, you know, I was married at the time, my former wife, you know, she was suffering from colitis. And I went on a crusade to try to save her life, basically. It was down to 78 pounds at one time. And I learned about alternative healing. And there was a wonderful doctor up here, Jack Saltanoff, a chiropractor. In those days, chiropractors were at the cutting edge, probably still are, of health, fitness, and nutrition. And, you know, they looked at the body in very different ways, in more holistic ways than medical practitioners who are so drug dependent. And, of course, there's no, you know, allotropic drug that cures a chronic degenerative disease. So I started learning about all these other things, and she became totally healed. And but again, it all tied again to trends. We started changing our lifestyle. eating differently, thinking differently, opening up our minds to wider things. So all things are connected, and that's what trend forecasting is. Rather than it looking at it one-dimensionally, opportunity misses those who view the eyes through the world through the eyes of their profession. It's kind of like desk vision or computer vision. Even with the news, if you go on, you know, when you go online and they see the preferences that you like and what you go to, they keep sending you more news related to those preferences. Great. You're only building up more strength in a very narrow field. So you're not looking at the bigger picture, the broader index. So that's what trend forecasting is. So from environment to food to geopolitics to economics, we look at as much as we can, technology, all breakthroughs, pending breakthroughs, and artful aging, a huge trend that we look at because, you know, as we see what's going on, you know, I'm the first wave of the baby boomers. You know, boomers, baby boomers are going to be breaking 70 in 2016. There are no babies no more. So then you pick up the news. Current events form future trends. And what's a big story in the Wall Street Journal? Well, about how dementia is costing so much and actually driving families into really very difficult times because a lot of the treatments and the care isn't covered through Medicare or Medicaid. So what does that tell us? Well, we know that the problem's going to worsen considering the health aspects and the health conditions of society. But then we look at it and say, okay, how do you look at it in terms of providing product and services in view of this changing trend that is really dramatic? And by the way, it's not only the United States that's aging. The entire planet is. So we look for the opportunities and the dangers. Avoid the dangers, seize the opportunities. So people interested in marketing, developing careers, take a very close look at this developing trend. You know, baby boomers, as I say, you know, they're going deaf, blind, and out of their mind. You know, you have macular degeneration, you start losing your hearing, and again, you look at the dementia trends and how they're looking at increases in upwards of 40%. So the opportunities in natural healing, in providing services, longevity centers to keep people alive, healthy, in a more artful and creative ways. I mean, Gary Null has, you know, them, but how many other people do? You know, so this is a huge market opportunity that's not being tapped. And again, when you look at society, it's a first, second, and third world society. And America, of course, is sinking very quickly into the third world. And we see it when you just look at the data. You know, I was on with Gary the other day talking about, you know, how, what is it? Over 50% of the people are earning less than $30,000 a year. That's no income. So then you go back to look at the Obamacare. It's not socialized medicine. It's fascism. We're being forced. It's the merger of state and corporate powers. We're being forced to buy health insurance from private corporations. Now look at the rate of increase for Medicare, of which I'm on. And you're looking at it going up in some states as much as 35%. Tie it back into the economy. What's the wage increase of people over the last year? Barely 2%. And they say there's no inflation. So you keep tying it together, and looking for the opportunities. So that's the foundation of trend tracking. And of course, which is always on people's minds the most, and again, thinking of the presidential reality show, go back to 1992 when Bill Clinton was running against Ross Perot and George Bush Sr. His line was they had in the offices to keep focusing on one thing. Quote, "It's the economy, stupid." And that's what it's usually about, the economy. So let's look at the economy. Again, current events form future trends. As we speak right now, we're looking at the world equity markets boosting up again to high gear. And why? Well, the Dow's up over 100 points. Well, because today, the Federal Reserve's, the Fed Open Market Committee, will probably announce that they're going to hold interest rates at that zero interest rate policy. Now, remember, we've seen zero interest rate policy going on since 2008. That's right. This is unprecedented in world history. So, what does it mean? Very simply, for all us people that go out and work for a living and get wages, and pensioners and retirees that put money in banks, we lose. They win. Because all of this low interest rate, zero interest rate policy has only juiced the equity markets because it allows all this merger and acquisition activity, which is now at record levels, and because they're borrowing money for nothing. In the carry trade, you borrow money for nothing, companies buy back their stock, drive up the prices, and those people at the top get more dough, while the rest of the economy is flat. Again, look at the job numbers. They stink. Look at the jobs being created. For all those jobs lost in manufacturing, the ones that were created since the panic of 08 have been in healthcare services and other low-paying jobs. They call it the hospitality sector. Yeah, making beds in hospitals and waiters and waitresses. And then, of course, all the millennials out there and other people that have gone to college with unprecedented amounts of debt that's unimaginable to a person from my generation. So you can see everything is flat. Then you look at new home sales just came in. Terrible numbers. So, ties it all back in. Negative interest rates. Dow Jones is going up. Equity markets in Europe are going up because they will allow this Ponzi scheme to continue. And that's all it is, which brings us to another trend. It's called bankism. This is not capitalism. I hear all these people saying, look at the problems of capitalism. Look what it's caused. Capitalism, again, no system is perfect. But once upon a time, and again, when I was a young guy, they used to have a thing called shoemakers. And they used to have, you know, drug stores. Oh, here's a trend. Current events form future trends. I talked about mergers and acquisitions. Yeah, today it was announced Walgreens is going to buy out Rite Aid to create a drugstore giant. A drugstore giant. Isn't that wonderful? Yeah, drug giant. Oh, boy. Madame, that's all you need. And go back again. I was mentioning once upon a time, and millennials, by the way, don't have a lot of reference points because when they were born into a very different world. Again, go back to capitalism. Again, drugstores, good or bad, pharmacies. You know, we had Robbins when I moved to Yonkers around the block from us. You know, Mr. Robbins and his son, his wonderful little drugstore, and they were so nice to you. They sold all these little products. They could no longer exist because of all the deregulation that happened, primarily under the Clinton administration, by the way. The Clintons have done more to destroy the commerce of America than any other administration. Oh, you love those GMOs. I forgot. Those are Clinton, brought to you by Clinton, too. Oh, you like those drug ads on TV? Yeah, that was a Bill Clinton deal as well. NAFTA, of course, Bill Clinton. They were the big, great deregulators. The Glass-Steagall Act that prevented the banks from robbing all our dough. Yeah, that was done under Clinton, too. Who was the Treasury Secretary under Clinton that started that one? Wasn't that Robert Rubin? Yeah. Where did Robert Rubin come from? Oh, I think he was Goldman Sachs' CEO. Yeah, and wasn't Henry Paulson the one under Bush that gave us Too Big to Fail and TARP? Wasn't he the CEO of Goldman Sachs, too? Yeah. Hey, and the guy that was the regulator of on the Commodities Future Trading Commission, Gary Gensler, he came from Goldman Sachs, yeah. Hey, wait a minute. The guy that's running the ECB, the European Central Bank, Mario Draghi, wasn't he the head of the Goldman Sachs European Division? Yeah. Hey, and what about the guy that's the head of the Bank of England, Mark Carney? Carney, when I was a kid, you know, going to the carnivals, that's what they call the guys, carnies. Yeah, Mark Carney, Goldman Sachs guy, going back to deregulation, going back to capitalism. At one time, capitalism worked, but they rigged the game. It's not capitalism anymore. Again, Walgreens, Rite Aid unite to create drugstore giant. They've taken away capitalism. It's fascism. It's the merger of state and corporate powers. Again, we're being forced to buy our health insurance from private health insurers, not socialism, fascism. Too Big to Fail, bailing out the banks, fascism, merger of state and corporate powers. It's not a revolving door. It's one door. It's the corporate door. And they're the ones that run the show. Again, that new head they're putting in from the FDA, corporate cat. Listen to it on Gary Noel and all those other commentators talking about who he is, where he comes from, and how he's paid by them. So going back to capitalism, this is not capitalism. And going back to the millennials, they don't have a lot of reference points to see what life used to be like. When there were haberdashers, when there were dress shops, when there were local stores before the Macy's. When I was a kid, there was a Macy's in Herald Square, one up in Yonkers, and one out in Long Island. And now they bought out everybody. Target, Walmart. No Walmarts. That was something you never heard of down in Arkansas. So what we're looking at, going back to the markets and the manipulation of bankism, bankism has replaced capitalism. There is no longer any free market discovery. It's gone. It's lost. Once upon a time, the markets used to go up and down based upon, you know, simple little things, you know, like, you know, whether or not the companies were really making money, real price discovery. Gone. The markets are only going up because of the record low interest rates. And when I talk about fascism and the corporations running everything, well, here I am on Progressive Radio Network. Well, who's in charge of 90% of the media? Six companies. That's right. Six companies control 90% of everything. Again, all things are connected. Tonight, another round of the Presidential Reality Show on CNBC. 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 Isn't that a private company? Well, they're a network. What do you mean a network? You know, these guys throw out these lines. Journalists. They're journalists. They're prostitutes. They're paid for media whores who are told what to do, how to do it, and what to say. You know, there's a movie out there that they it's making the rounds at the award shows, you know, the film festivals. It's called Zizi, Z-I, Z.I., and Honey Boy. And so my book, what Zitzi gave Honey Boy, Zitzi is the Neapolitan dialect for auntie. Z is aunt, Zitzi is your auntie. And the movie opens up. I'm on the phone. I used to be on Oprah, the Today Show, Good Morning America, CNBC, Bloomberg, you name it. I've been on all of them, from O'Reilly to Brian Williams. Yeah, it was with Brian Williams talking about, you know, he was talking about what he was going on in them helicopters in Iraq, and I was talking about when I was in Nam. Only kidding. But I was on with Brian Williams, every one of them. The movie opens up. I just got my third cancellation of the day because I said what would happen in Afghanistan. In those days, USA Today used to run my top trends every year. And the headline in the December 14th, 2000 USA Today, and you can get it on our website, trendsresearch.com, go to the forecast page. It read, 2001 won't be our year, Trendseer says. Now, nobody said that back then. This is 9 months before 9/11. No one. And I warned that a wave of anti-Americanism was sweeping the globe because of the United States foreign policy. So when 9/11 happens, everybody's calling me up. What's going on? What's going on? See what's going on? I've been writing about this for years. Wrote about it in the Trends Journal. Wrote about it in my book, Trends 2000. It was a national bestseller in 17 languages. I wrote about 1996 when the book came out, December of 96. I wrote about you're waking up in the new millennium and a new Crusades 2000 is raging. That's before George Bush used that line. So, I ended up getting blackballed from all of the media. How does this all tie into the presidential reality show? Oh, things got worse, by the way, when I said what would happen in Iraq. Yeah, nobody wanted to hear that one either. So, from being the trend darling of the media, I got blackballed. Goes back to today's presidential reality show and these little schemes that they put on over here with calling them debates. These are not debates. They're not debates. They have nothing to do with debates. They're a game show. And they're brought to you by corporations. Not democracy, sorry. One time the League of Women Voters used to run the debates when they were debates. You got 1 minute to answer the question, and if your name is, you know, in that 1 minute somebody mentions your name, you have a 30-second response. 30 seconds to respond. You're calling this a debate? Debate? How about a game show? How about beat the clock? That's all it is. It's a game show. We're talking about the largest economic and military power in the world, the person that's going to be the commander in chief, and you have a minute to answer a question on life and death, on the economy and the future. And 30 seconds to respond? And who's running it? Corporations. Fox. CBS. ABC. NBC. NPR is a joke. One after another. Funded by corporations, isn't NPR? Huh? Brought to you by, yeah. This is not a democracy. It's dead. The corporations are running the presidential election. You saw with the debate the last time out. They decide who the winner and loser is. They decide who's going to get most airtime. They decide, they. Who are they? Well, the prostitutes and the corporations. Democracy's dead. Progressive Radio Network lives. And there are a number of us out there that are doing it and trying to make it happen in a more positive way. So again, going back to the economy, going back to the presidential reality show, then we have to go back to war. And war is a big one. You look at every one of the presidential candidates, they're out war hawking each other. Except, I have to say, for Donald Trump. I mean, for example, he's the only one that said he talked to Putin and is happy that Putin's fighting in Syria rather than them doing it than us. And on a lot of levels, you know, Trump, what I like the best about Trump is he's showing what a joke this whole thing is. Because everybody would be playing Mr. Nice Guy and talking to each other in political terms and not crossing the line. And he's crossing the line. And some of the line is, you know, is I don't disagree with him. In the sense of when it comes to war, I want peace. And as you know, we launched Occupy Peace officially here in Colonial Kingston. And the website, you could go to our trendsresearch.com and go to the links. You'll see Occupy Peace down below, or go direct to the OccupyPeace.us website. And Gary Null is here, along with Ralph Nader, Dr. Robert Thurman, Cindy Sheehan. You know, peace isn't popular. Nobody's talking about peace. Have you heard? Listen tonight. Listen tonight to the debates. Listen to any of them ask, how can we bring about peace? No, I say we got to get tougher with ISIS. If you elect me, we'll bomb everybody around the world. That's what they'll say, basically. More war talk, no peace talk. So again, Occupy Peace. Peace isn't popular. The press isn't talking about it. And we are, because, again, it goes back to the other trends. Look what's going on in Europe. I got back from Italy. I was there this summer. And I went from Italy down to Croatia, Slovenia, all the way down the Croatian coast, the Dalmatian coast of Dubrovnik, and then took the ferry back to Bari from Dubrovnik, Bari, Italy. Interesting, by the way. I was with my cousin Vinny. Actually, I do have a cousin Vinny. And he lives half the year here and half of it in Minorca, down on the Amalfi coast, just above Salerno. And that's where my family comes from. May they rest in peace. Vica Quenza, which is right between Pompeii and Sorrento. And Vica Quenza, by the way, is famous for their pizza by the meter. And the other side of the family comes from Altavilla Erpina. So, Vinny and I, we went to the Milano Expo, which was a joke. It was about sustainability and feeding the planet. Brought to you major, I'm not making this up, sponsors were McDonald's and Coca-Cola. And the United States Pavilion was a disgrace. Lay's potato chips. This is, Pepsi Cola. You can't make this stuff up. Food sustainability. Anyway, we went from Milano to Trieste, all the way down the coast. And in Italy, migrants everywhere. Everywhere we look, migrants, people fleeing. And by the way, that whole trip from Milano all the way down to Dubrovnik, we counted the grand total of 6 cop cars. 6 in 3 countries. Italy, Slovenia, and Croatia. 6 cop cars patrolling, you know, if you're going to get it, you know, waiting there to get you if you're speeding. 6. That's 2 stops on the New York State Thruway, man. I came back the other night. People pulled over everywhere. Again, the military mindset. Want war everywhere? Let's have a war against the people. Going back to the presidential reality show, tying all these things together, talking about going to Italy, talking about the migrant crisis, because that's what they keep saying in the papers. Migrant crisis, migrant crisis. It is not a migrant crisis. It's prostitute language. It's a refugee crisis. And where are they refugees from? They're refugees from the cities that the United States and its coalition of the killing are bombing, from countries that the United States has destroyed, along with its coalition of the killing. But you don't read about that in any of the papers. No, no. Let's be proper. Let's call it migrants. And let's blame it on somebody else. We won't blame it on George W. Bush and all those people that sold the big lie that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction ties to Al-Qaeda. No, no, no. Won't blame it on him. Won't blame it on all those people in the media that promoted it, like the New York Times. You remember those yellow cakes and aluminum tubes, don't you? That lie. No, don't blame it on them for destroying Iraq, killing estimated over a million people, and turning the country into the hellhole that it is now. Gee, I wonder how ISIS was formed, huh? I wonder how these radical groups came about. Couldn't be because it killed so many people and destroyed the future of so many. Nah, had nothing to do with it. Anyway, look at the Syria. I forgot about Syria. You remember Hillary Clinton. Assad has to go. And we need a no-fly zone over there. She loves those no-fly zones, man, just like her old man did. Yeah, you forgot about Bill Clinton's no-fly zones over Iraq? How when Bill Clinton got elected, bam, bombs over Baghdad right away. You forgot about Madeleine Albright? Maybe not all that bright. Another Secretary of State? Yeah, under Clinton. Asked on CBS if the death of 500,000 Iraqi children under the age of five because of sanctions and bombings and destruction by Willie Slick Willie Clinton was worth the price. And what does Madeleine say? Oh, yes, it was worth the price. Oh, yeah. Hey, hear about those 17 people that were killed in France with that Charlie Hebdo incident? Whoa, that was a big one. Hey, how about that guy that was shot up in Canada by that Islamic fundamentalist? Yeah, let's rob the people of all our rights. But kill 500,000 children under the age of five. Ah, that's all right. Going back to war talk, Hillary Clinton, no fly zones. How about the one she did in Libya? You remember that one, don't you? Of course. Gaddafi has to go. Who are these people that say who should go? I got an idea. How about before you decide what should happen in a foreign country, fix Detroit? Yeah, here it's not doing so good. Oh, how about those numbers? People aren't making any money. How about fixing the economy? Hey, Hillary, you been to Camden lately? Hey, Christie, that's one of your places down there. Not doing so good. But boy, do you talk tough. All these guys, Kadesh, all talking tough. How about fixing the Rust Belt before you're going to fix another country? Again, let's tie it all together. Go back to the refugee crisis. How about Afghanistan, the longest war in American history? I wrote a piece in a Trends Journal a couple of months back. It opened up with the lines about 9/11 and George Bush's address to the nation on the eve of 9/11 and the one 9 days later in the State of the Nation. And I said, only a madman would speak these words and only people dumbstruck with terror would believe them. I broke down George Bush's entire speech. Not one fact was given. Not one fact. Only more innuendos as to why we should invade Afghanistan. And then I carried it through and showed all the broken promises that they were going to promise, that they were going to give us facts that Osama bin Laden was behind it and Taliban's role in it. None were ever provided. None. Oh, you know the guy that said that one? Colin Powell. Colin. Yeah, that's where that stuff passes through, right? Yeah, that Colin. The guy that held up that little vial. Vile man. At the UN. and claimed that it was proof of weapons of mass destruction for Iraq. Yeah, he was the one that was going to promise us proof. No proof was provided. So again, go back to the refugee crisis. Where are they coming from? They're coming from Afghanistan. They're coming from Syria. They're coming from Libya. And now they're also coming from Yemen. That's right. Bombs away over Yemen with our allies. You hear all our presidential candidates talking about our Arab allies, the Saudis, the Wahhabis. Yeah, they've killed, what, they beheaded over 175 people this year? Boy, they got ISIS beat by a long shot. They're bombing the poorest country in the Middle East, the Yemenis, who have done nothing to them. Under the line that they got to restore the past president, who the United States and Saudi Arabia and its coalition of the killing propped up. Where are the refugees coming from? It's the blood on the hands of every American that supports the Republicans and the Democrats. They're murderers and thieves. So tie it all together. Our defense budget just keeps growing. Remember Obama was going to cut back? Keeps cutting back on his promises. Has he kept any? I'll tell you what, folks. My first day in office, by the end of this year, I'm going to close Guantanamo. Oh, and then those liberals say, well, they only could do so much. Yeah, like that 30,000 troop surge in Afghanistan. It was perfect, wasn't it? Oh, you remember, Obama, we're going to get all those troops out of there in Afghanistan. Well, we're going to leave 10,000, but by the end of the year, we'll only have 5,000. Well, we're going to keep 10,000. Well, and we're going to keep 10,000 next year, too. Liars, cowards, frauds, and freaks. It's the presidential reality show. And it's not only here, it's a country near you. How could it be that so many people let so few run and ruin their lives? Go down the list of names. Look at the faces. Listen to the actions that they have taken, the words they have spoken. Hollande over in France. We got to go into Mali because we can't get out over our French colonial trip. And what are they doing? Destroying the joint over there. Sarkozy pushed for the overthrow of Gaddafi, along with Cameron. Look at these little boys. Not a man among them. Go around the world. From South Africa to Chile. Go around Brazil. One political party running and ruining the lives of people. Oh, it's better than the other one. That's the only thing that they could say. So the future, really, as you look at it, when you see so few that are in control, as Ralph Nader keeps saying, and Gary Null and others, including myself, it only takes very few of us to change it. If few could ruin it, a few could fix it. It does not take a majority to prevail, but rather an irate, tireless minority keen on setting brush fires of freedom in the minds of men and women. That was Samuel Adams. And this is Gerald Celente. And that's Trends This Week. See you next week. And let us know if you have any questions and if you have any answers. So that's it. Keep your eye on the trends. They're shaping the future.
Sitter on ya bisha olo ite va ite vene sempre pakalara dal man vene Se ci vecchia vande se pakalara fecche me my window.
collie in his hand.